So you've decided to give up that old behavior that's been killing you and all you care for and surrender to a power greater than yourself. That's the first step. Surrender is what opens the prison door. Now it's time to walk through that door and into a whole new way of life. Spirituality, self-care, service, social connection, and the simple daily disciplines that pave the way to lasting freedom. This is Positive Sobriety. Welcome to another episode of the Positive Sobriety Podcast. Well, let me see. It's not been that long. I think just last week we posted an episode with Texas Streety, didn't we, David?
We sure did.
We're keeping the rhythm. We're sticking pretty closely to our goal of posting once a week.
Yeah, yes. And it's been a little challenging with travel this summer for us and getting ourselves in the same places at the same times, but... We managed.
I'm making a fresh commitment in the year ahead, 2020, man. We're going to nail it. 52 episodes. We got to get it done.
We can do that. We can do that. Rex can piece us together from anywhere.
Well, I'm thinking positive thoughts these days.
Well, good for you.
It's all about positive sobriety, man.
Yeah,
it is. It really, really is. You know, I told you I've been listening to a lot of scientific shit and, you know, reading these, you know, heavy books about rewiring the brain. I got one little piece. It was just, you know, it seemed campy. It seemed corny, but I tried it out with my wife. This was a recommendation from Erica Spiegelman, a book called Rewired.
Okay.
And so she's talking about, you know, positive steps that you can take to aid the process of rewiring your brain and addiction toward recovery. And so she suggested something called the gratitude game.
Oh, wow.
It's like a childhood, it's like a kid's ABC game.
Like a Pollyanna kind of game? Or
so, you know what, the other day, you know, Allie and I have been married for 41 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we don't do as many goofy things as we used to. And this really sounded artificial. But, you know, we'd been watching television and the show ended. And I said, hey, how would you like to play a game? And Allie went, you know, what kind of game? And that would have meant something entirely different 20, 30 years ago.
I was going to say, yeah. Bless her heart.
Do I have to dress up?
The PTSD just kicked in. And that's...
I said, no. There's this game called the gratitude game. And it's an alphabet game. We'll just go through the alphabet, and each of us will say something that we're grateful for that begins with that letter of the alphabet.
Oh, wow.
Now, the amazing thing is that scientific studies have shown the changes that are made in the brain as we concentrate on gratitude.
Right. Right, absolutely.
It also, it boosts mood, it boosts the immune system. So, there in the comfort of our living room, we took 15 minutes, played the gratitude game, cracked each other up. It was wonderful.
Wow.
And I think I'm going to make it kind of a, I know Allie will be up for playing it again here in the next couple of days.
Yeah. Well, that's a great thing because, you know, the gratitude exercises that we always encourage in recovery are all about refocusing the place from which the brain is triggering.
Yeah.
You know, you come from a completely different place in your brain when you're experiencing gratitude than focusing on anxiety or whatever. And we only have so much bandwidth, so we focus on gratitude and we're not consumed with our scarcity or our lack or whatever.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that game. That sounds fun.
Yeah. So I recommend that to our listeners. There it is, free of charge from the Positive Sobriety Podcast. This week's hint.
Play the gratitude game.
That's a great, and it's a great segue to our guest today, because he spent a little bit of time talking to us about gratitude in his world.
And here is a guy who is committed to fostering a hopeful view of the future.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So now, tell us a little bit. This is Recovery Today magazine. We'll hear some more about it in the interview
right.
It's about to run. But you have an article that just came out. Great
I did,
article.
Yeah. Uh-huh. They have a pretty wide reach, and I was fortunate and was invited to contribute an article to the July issue, and it was a great opportunity to think and write about resentment and relapse, which we talk about a lot,
mm-hmm.
and have gotten some good feedback from that article. And they are a very focused publication about positivity in your recovery. What are you doing now to bring a positive result for other people?
Fantastic. So stay with us, listeners. You're going to love this conversation. We'll be back in a minute on the Positive Sobriety Podcast. And welcome back to the Positive Sobriety Podcast. David, would you introduce our guest today?
I will. This is a man that I've recently met, Rob Hanley. And Rob is the publisher of a magazine that has a very wide reach called Recovery Today. And I had the privilege of having an article in Recovery Today just this past month of mm-hmm. July issue, and did an article on resentment and relapse. And
you mean there's a connection between resentment and relapse? Really?
I've heard
yeah, okay.
that it could be one thing could lead to another, but
okay.
and they may not be in that order always.
But
anyway, but it was great to get to be a part of that, and they have a very similar philosophy with their publication.
Uh-huh.
As we do with this podcast, about having some silver linings, having a publication of hope, having an opportunity for people to share their story,
yeah.
but in light of what they're doing now and what they're doing with it. And so, Rob, welcome to Positive Sobriety. And we also want to hear your story as well. But welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks so much, guys. Thanks for everything that you're doing. It's a real honor and pleasure to be here. And anybody that is kind of along the beach, figuratively, if you will, the story of the father and son or father and daughter walking along with the starfish, if you know that one, that's
oh, yeah.
throwing a starfish back in. Anybody that I bump into along the way that's, you know, all about helping one single person take one single positive step, I'm very happy to jump in and collaborate. So appreciate what you're doing.
Well, thank you. Thank you for being here and joining us and helping us do it. And Rob, how did you, I know that, you know, obviously you're one of your hats that you wear is publishing the magazine, but you do a multitude of things, I think, or have. And tell us a little bit about your story.
Oh, that's interesting. I kind of didn't really expect that question.
Sorry about that. We can always edit.
No, it's okay. It's not an editable at all. There's nothing that's to be hidden. I kind of compartmentalize a lot of the stuff that I do in my own life. My background, I guess I'd say probably starting from my sobriety background to be most kind of relevant is I got sober in the spring of 1994. And so about a little over 25 years now is kind of what I'm going on.
Wow.
But my background, I'm the last of 8 kids, and all of them pretty successful. I should say actually very successful, as a matter of fact. My father was an Air Force colonel. He'd been a base commander all over. But by the time I came along, he was pretty much retired. And my family's highly entrepreneurial, a few self-made millionaires in it, and just, you know, kind of good, you know, good roots, not a real, unpleasant childhood or anything like that. I look back now, my father's passed away, and probably a gambling addiction. I shouldn't say probably, a gambling addiction.
Okay.
Mostly from stories that I had heard before I was around, kind of the, you know, bad ones where he'd gamble his whole paycheck away or something like that. But there are pretty funny stories now about, particularly about how my mom handled it, because she's quite remarkable. But, you know, for the most part, it wasn't like a lot of the stories that most people I hear from in the magazine. That's some pretty traumatic stuff. I had a pretty good, pretty decent childhood. I grew up in Tucson, Arizona. And I've always kind of been somebody, as the youngest, that's kind of out to prove things a little bit. And I having a lot of successful brothers and sisters, you know, looking to just glean any kind of little nugget that I could from them. So the path that I chose, I got a degree in computer engineering from the University of Arizona. And I thought, you know, I'll you know, make my mark doing that. I started out in technology. I live in Seattle, and I worked a number of years, you know, with all kinds of gigantic computer systems. And then finally, I started selling computer systems. But I looked a lot at actually my brother, Greg, who he's actually the publisher of the magazine. The magazine itself, Recovery Today magazine, was is my brainchild. I'm the key man in it. It's really been my passion since we started it. But my brother, he's the one that kind of had made everything happen financially and for a lot of the different things to occur. And my brother has been an entrepreneur since day one, didn't graduate from college or anything like that. So I saw this lifestyle that he had as a young, even as a young person, where, you know, it seemed like he was out doing whatever he wanted to do and making a lot of money, and kind of looking at the whole corporate path and the 40 years and stuff like that. When the internet came along, and a little bit before the internet, I got into a lot of entrepreneurial endeavors, some affiliate marketing, some direct sales, some network marketing, and some things like that that you probably would resonate real strongly with somebody that said, hey, what do you want to do with your life and things like that. And that led me into personal development, kind of led me into a completely different path spiritually. I had some great mentors as a, you know, kind of a younger man trying to decide, like, well, what is it that I want to do in my life? And I still kind of love to do that too. I think life is very dynamic. And in fact, that was really the impetus that started me out on a path to sobriety. Was just, you know, I started a journey in personal development, and really for me personally, making a very strong connection with the Lord. And I decided, you know, I don't just kind of one day, my story, my sobriety and recovery story is quite unremarkable. Although I have had, you know, a lot of negative things in my life. In terms of DUI, I crashed a car, should have died, and things like that. But when I actually did finally stop drinking, it was pretty unremarkable. Somebody asked me, what did you quit drinking? I haven't seen you have a beer in about, you know, a month or something like that. What's your story? Why did you quit drinking? It was a roommate of mine. And I thought about it for a moment, and all of my mentors that I had and people I was kind of trying to follow at the time, none of them drank. They all had pretty good relationships with their wives. They went to church. They were very focused on what they wanted to do and helping people and things like that. And I thought about it for a moment as I got him a glass of wine, because I was asking him, give me a glass of wine while you're up there. And, you know, get yourself a beer. Why'd you quit drinking? That was how it all started. And I thought about it for a minute, and I said, yeah, I guess I did. So almost as an experiment that you can – an ongoing experiment, I'll say, that a person really can transform. Not for a little bit of time, not for a day or a week, but you can actually create habits in your life that will last your entire lifetime. For me, I just kind of started redefining myself that I don't drink. I'm the guy that that doesn't drink. I might go out as a young person. I was about 28, 29. I might even go out to a bar with you or something like that if it's a work event or something. But I'm the designated driver. Oh, no, thanks. I never made a big deal out of it at all. It was just like, I just don't drink. So I wasn't the like the soup Nazi of not drinking, or the AA, yeah. Or you have to, or your life is messed up. I on purpose just looked to very low-key kind of define myself as, I'm a person that doesn't drink. I didn't go, hey, I'm sober, this, that, and the other. And back in my day, you know, I've been to a few AA meetings. I've been to an Al-Anon meeting. I dated a girl real seriously before when I was in college that her mother was, you know, a two-a-day meeting person. Mm-hmm. And, very highly, highly dysfunctional, affluent, but very highly dysfunctional family. And, we all go through our own journey. So I've very experienced with it. But for me, it was just like, I don't drink. And that was kind of how my story happened. But in terms of what I done and do, I've always been somebody that I like to, instead of hauling buckets of water to earn a living, as the story, one guy I like a lot, his name's Robert Kiyosaki. He wrote a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. He does a lot of investing and real estate stuff and things like that. And so probably as the youngest and looking out over the horizon and saying, well, do I want to do that? What is it that I want to do? And even to this day, kind of thinking like, what's going to create the best life for you? What's going to be your best path to your happiest, most fulfilled kind of life? I started thinking about, well, I want to do things like build pipelines where I can work right now and then I can reap the benefit. Or I want to develop skill sets. The internet, of course, changed all of that. So I've done a lot of affiliate marketing. I like to say, I get in, if I think something is cool, it's beneficial, it's something that's going to require not much work, it'll pay me for a long time, I like the people that I'm working with, I'm pretty open-minded on stuff. And when the magazine, the genesis of the magazine kind of came along, and to kind of answer a little bit of the question that you asked just now, or will ask, is my brother, the one, his name's Greg, that's our publisher. At the time, he owned either 9 or it got up to 13 different drug rehabs. And started in Malibu. He got sober a few years after I did. I think he's got about 15 or 16 years now. And so I had told him, you're paying for all of this traffic to come to your website, your rehab websites, your treatment center websites. Really, we should have something that is a way to build an email list. That was really what it was all about. We need to build an email list. And that was way past the time that there would be a newsletter. Who would want to be on a newsletter? Right. So I kind of pitched in the whole idea like, well, what if we had a magazine? I've seen kind of this new thing, like we could actually have a magazine. Didn't want to name it after his treatment center, but originally our original home was actually inside the website of his magazine. And what happened almost immediately as I started this out is I discovered that it really started to take on a life of its own. Like, it was not going to be like just something to capture somebody's email address and give them some stuff. Like, people really liked it a lot. Mm-hmm. And along the way, I really fell in love with it as well. And so now we've published 56 monthly issues of it. And we've got a long list of people that have been our contributors, some of them in every single issue. Mm-hmm. My friend Jason, he's at Alcoholic Poetry. My friend Fuzaro, Sherry Gaba, Jennifer Jimenez, my good friend Colin Scummy Morrison. And these people were people like me that they just kind of came, they loved the magazine, and then we became friends, and they wanted to contribute, and they wanted to help. And so every single month from the very first month of Recovery Today, when originally I thought, well, this will be something to kind of build an email list for my brother's rehab, it started to grow in a lot of different directions and to reach out in a lot of different ways, kind of with one intention from the beginning, and that is Recovery Today magazine is a magazine of hope. And if we can help one person to stay sober for one more day, or to take one step to staying sober for one more day, then we really feel like we've done our job. And so that's kind of the genesis of it. Each and every issue, we've really tried very intently to make it better than the last issue. Mm-hmm. And we've been really blessed by what it is and what it's become. And it almost in the beginning took on an entirely independent life from what it was that we intended it to be.
Yeah.
And I say now to people, if I won Powerball or something like that, I would still do Recovery Today. It's good therapy for me. I enjoy it. I enjoy interactions like this. I get to meet some pretty cool people and talk about stuff that's pretty deep and heavy that You'd never get to talk to people. You know, mostly it'd be like, hey, can I have your autograph? Or I saw you on a show. Thought you were cool. But when you really get to sit down and talk with people, I think about the essence and the meaning, the most meaningful things in life. I'm very, very blessed. Like, I have to pinch myself sometime and go, God, how cool is that? Like, I talked to this guy and these are some of the things that we talked about, like human to human. So that's kind of my story. And I know a long answer to a short question, but
that's a great,
I'm used to being the guy doing the interviewing and not the,
No, I love it because, that encapsulates a lot of what I wanted to know. And what is the reach of your magazine now, Rob?
Well, we're in the several hundred thousands, between our subscriber lists and our social. We're still mostly in the United States, but as you would probably imagine being in English speaking, it's pretty big in the UK. It's big in Australia, and Canada as well. But, the demographic is still mostly the United States. We talk about things like the opiate crisis, which, of course, you know, is it's certainly not something that is unique to the U.S., but I think probably maybe the most emphasis on this, probably because so many people, it's, you know, it's impacted so many people. But yeah.
You know, Rob, listening to your story just underlines for me and highlights for me the truth of something that I just heard Mark Lewis say. Mark Lewis, the author of a great book called The Biology of Desire, really describes addiction as a learning disorder. And he says that it happens when the deep motivational core of the brain gets disconnected from that higher portion, the left dorsal ventricle, for what it's worth, that's capable of long-term thinking, linear thinking, and can envision a future, a past, a future. And he said, in order to get sober, to move beyond addiction into recovery, we have to be able to envision a narrative. And what happens during active addiction is that connection between the motivational part and that kind of long range guiding part gets broken. And so we get caught just in short term cycles of, you know, and that just focusing on trying to stop the urge right now, to resist the urge, if we just focus on resistance, he says that really is doomed to failure. It can happen. It can work in the short term, but for long-term recovery, we have to be able to see a future that we can move to. We have to have a perspective, got to be able to get there. And I love, Rob, how you were able to, you know, I see it as really a gift of grace that you were able to take stock of your life, look long-term and say, where do I want to be? And then you had, it sounds to me as though it was channeled partly to you by your mentors. They gave you hope for a different life. And now you're, I sometimes call myself a hope dealer. You're doing the same thing with the magazine. Every issue is full of hope.
I really appreciate that affirmation because it is the litmus test of everything that we do. And I tell people, you know, we're dealing with some pretty dark subject matter here, you know, death of loved ones, unnecessary death, I probably would say too. And then a lot of pain and just mental illness, you know, depression, you know, what they call dual diagnosis type of things, and anxiety. And so from the very beginning, when I started to think about, well, what is this going to be? And I don't want to just, you know, it's a very much a team effort, but a lot of it was my vision. And especially early on saying, no, that's not what we're doing. No, that's not what this is. The very beginning and the cornerstone of it was, we're a magazine of hope. I don't even know that I read that anywhere. I mean, I know that it's something like you'd say, well, God, that's what we're doing. We're hope dealers. But, you know, and I think ideas float around out in the universe. I was like, what is it? Well, the first thing I'd say is it's a magazine of hope. And then I kind of came up with the whole thing about, like, if we could help one person take one step, you know, in the right direction for one day, we're good. You know, this is all we want to do, and every person is meaningful. And so for every piece of content that we do, an article, an interview, anything like that at all, it has to have either one of three things. Number one, and ideally all three of them. Number one, it has to be something that actually gives hope. Number two, it might also be something where you'd say, I never knew that, or I never thought of it that way, or that's a new perspective. That's very interesting. Like what I like to say is something that they can take away and they can stick in their pocket and they can go, that's pretty cool. They can kind of add to their thing like that, or it's something that's all three. And so that's really the whole idea of it, but it has to at least have ingredient number one, that it has to be something that actually gave hope. There has to be some kind of happy ending to the end of the story. Mm-hmm. And so, and it's become, for me, it's become having conversations like this has become good therapy. I think very deeply, probably too deeply, honestly, because part of my story, although is not a tragic personal story of, I can't say, you know, I was a heroin addict. I've never, you know, done opiates other than for when I hurt my shoulder once for a couple of weeks. And then I thought, oh, I like this a lot. I probably shouldn't do this.
Yeah.
I should have died, you know, in a car, really bad car accident. Fortunately, I didn't hurt anybody or myself. As I said, the youngest of eight kids, I do remember my sister when I was about 8 or 9, 10 years old, my sister was a heroin addict. That was back when there was hippies, you know, it was probably 1972 or 1973 to date myself a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, my brother was, Greg was a full blown addict, from the, you know, in his early 20s, I would say, but for some strange reason became a multi-millionaire. He's highly driven. He's very, pretty amazing, remarkable. And then my same sister, she had married, you know, so we've got a share of these things. It touches everybody's family deeply. My own demon, if you will, has been when I was in college, I realized one, I remember distinctly when it was a Christmas vacation and school was very stressful. I was getting ready to go to, construction jobs during breaks. And it was real early in the morning. I was taking a shower and I thought to myself, God, I feel really down. And I started thinking like, why am I feeling so like blue? I mean, I feel really not good emotionally. And that was the first time that I remember about thinking like, depression. And, you know, and then really for a couple of years thinking, God, I wonder if I'm just going to crack up one day. Like, I'm just going to like wig out, you know, or hearing stories of people getting, something really bad where they got to lock them away in the loony bin type of thing.
Right.
Am I going to have a nervous breakdown? Am I going to wig out? That became what was called agoraphobia, and being terrified to ask my mother, you know, Mom, I think I'm going crazy. Mm. That was about 21 or 22 years old. And I thought, this is going to ruin my chances to have any kind of a job. Like, I'm going to have craziness on my record, like forever. I can't go see. So my mom, she said, oh no, we'll just take care of this. We'll go get you a therapist. And this is, again, this is like the mid 80s. Nobody needs to know at all. And she gave me a book to read by a therapist that had gone through a terrible depression. So it comes back around kind of full circle, okay? Everybody thinks that they're unique and that they're special when we're isolated. And I believe, my personal belief is spiritual. I think that the whole way that you do things is you cut one bison or buffalo, you cut it off from the herd, and it's isolated and it's alone, okay? And then the lion can come in and chomp it down. When we're all together and we realize my problems are the same as yours and yours, and anybody else that's listening that's out there, we're stronger. Mm-hmm. The truth is we're really not as special as we think we are. Everything right. we're going through, somebody else is going through or has gone through it. And so just reading a book of somebody that was depressed and had a nervous breakdown, you know, and then went on to become a therapist and become successful and helping other people. And like, wow, there's somebody that I can talk to that understands this.
Right.
It's really, really, really powerful. And so I think really this is the whole essence of life. I think honestly, that the whole purpose of everything that we're put here to do is to have experiences, good and bad. And the bad ones, by the way, they make the story interesting. Mm-hmm. They really make the story interesting.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And they make it interesting, and then to turn around and to go through it somehow, some way, whatever it might be, and there's horrible stories, but then to turn around and to tell somebody else, it'll be okay, man. Like, mm-hmm. I went through something, what you're going through, I went through it almost as bad or a lot worse, and yeah. You can do it. So,
yeah,
I think this is what gives us meaning in life, actually.
Right. And it's like when we say that addiction isn't just a disorder of abuse of a substance or a behavior, but it's a connection disorder. You know, we don't have connection. And I think your magazine addresses that in and of itself, Rob, because I can subscribe to this, open it up, see any number of stories, connect with any number of people who may not be exactly in the place I am in life, but has shared a space that I am in life. And I feel connected. I feel wow, maybe there is somebody. And another thing too, you guys deal with process addictions and not just substance abuse or substance use disorders. In the magazine.
True. And it comes, I would say, you know, from my own, it probably comes from my own personal, I don't know, bent or desires or who I am personally. Although, like I said, very familiar personally with substance abuse disorder, we reach out and whether it might be pornography, I think is just, you know, really horrible, man. It's very incredibly destructive. I think maybe even bigger than the opiate crisis itself, but it's hidden.
Yeah.
Or eating disorders or, you know, even still now to, even recently, sometimes I have anxiety and I can't explain why. And so I have my own things that I do. Part of it is trying to say, like, I wonder how long this will last. That's kind of hard when it's pretty uncomfortable. And, you know, thinking like, well, the answer is to step back and go, this is very interesting. I wonder how long this is last. Instead of trying to get involved in it and try, when you try to work through it, it tends to make it worse.
Yes.
So, yeah, process addictions. And then now what I've learned recently, I read a really wonderful book, or I'm in the process of reading it, by one of my new friends. His name's Jeffrey Combs. I'll give him a plug here because he's super cool. He talked about emotional addictions. And I don't mean love addiction or sex addiction, like addiction to procrastination and addictions to and even I might not be saying it right. And so maybe somebody throw a rock at me here, but like addiction to the whole idea that somebody's going to come and rescue you, that somebody's going to come and help you out, that your ship is going to come in. And so, again, it leads all the way back around to, I think, to have a life that is a good life, a life is a life that's well examined, and then to kind of think, like, where is it that I want to go? I mean, I don't want to just, for me, I don't want to just drift around, man. I want to, if life was Disneyland, I don't want to go to Disneyland. I mean, who goes to Disneyland? And, you know, when you walk in, there's like a couple of the coffee shops and some things like that, but you really haven't gone in. You know, you got to walk through a lot of the stuff and things like that. But, you know, Disneyland, once you go through the gate, you got to walk quite a ways until you get into where the park opens up. And then it's huge, right? There's all kinds. I mean, you can spend many days on a vacation at Disneyland. Who wants to go to Disneyland and then just stop at the coffee shop and stay the whole day there, right? Like, when you go to Disneyland, you're like, oh, wow, like, well, how was it? And the first thing, the best experience at Disneyland is we went on every ride, man. Like, we went on Space Mountain a million times. Like, when I die, I want to think like I did, you know, like I did it, man. Not like you know, like, you know, it was cool. I stayed sober. I did this. I did that. Or you know. And so I look at very, very purposefully, like, what's the ingredients for a good life? And I'll add one more thing. And you can probably tell I'm probably a little bit ADD. Also, I like to talk, so forgive me and just interrupt.
You're great. Makes for great interviews.
But there's one thing that I think about is for those that might be hearing this and have depression, one thing that occurred to me, and my therapist told me this, actually, funny how things, you pay it forward and you ding, you know, you ping somebody and you ping somebody. And so now somebody's going to hear this is, she said, you know, because you're depressed, we have the ability to feel things very deeply. I cry a lot. I get emotional a lot. I get choked up really easily. But that also means that we have a higher capacity, I believe, to feel the highs, to feel the joy of life. And so I think about it a lot, and I think, okay, if I can feel these lows, and unfortunately, sometimes I think, what the hell, man? Like, why is it like my natural state would be low? Why do I have to work just to try to be normal like everybody else? Well, it's okay, because I want to think like, what can I do to live a higher, more joyful life? You mentioned connections. So I'm constantly studying things like about the brain and about dopamine and depression and anxiety and things like that. And one of the things that I like quite a bit is the idea that the happiest lives are those that are filled with meaningful relationships, close friends that you can have, people that you can rely on, and people that know you and that you know them, and then to have some kind of purpose overall in your life. And recently, you know, I've really found that in my life. It's not just about making a bunch of money. It's not just about all of these different kind of things, surfacey things that the world would have. And it's for me, it's about creating as many deep and meaningful and personal relationships that I can with people. I'll interview people and I'll tell them, sometimes I'll say, man, we're friends now. Like, we're like, you know, so that's kind of what I think about in terms of philosophy of what it is. And that's it comes all the way back around to like substance abuse disorder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And Rob, I mean, I think that hunger to know and be known is at the core of most of us when we're trying to find it somewhere else.
Yeah. 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 Speaking personally as a sex addict and having really experienced the destructive effects of pornography myself, I now recognize that I was medicating loneliness with something that left me only lonelier.
Mm-hmm.
And allowing, you know, accepting a virtual connection with an imaginary connection with a virtual person.
Mm.
And in the process, compromising my ability to form and sustain a real relationship with an actual person.
And it's so interesting because I think that when we talk about, what we really talk about is we're talking about facsimiles.
Yes.
That's really what this all boils down to is, and I think even the definition of perversion is something that is, it's like a facsimile, but it's twisted around. So instead of having a real relationship with somebody, we have a virtual relationship. Instead of doing things like being of service to others and hard work, you know, I used to think like, how can I avoid work? Like, I want to work as little, still almost kind of say that. I want to work as little as possible, make as much as I can, do what I want, you know, things like that. But I believe biblically is what it says. My belief is that God didn't make us to work. God made work for us.
Yeah.
That we were intended to labor and to do something. Ideally something, it should be something that you enjoy. Mm-hmm. But we get deep satisfaction and a dopamine release by doing work. So I think of these things as like, well, you can take drugs and it's a facsimile of this dopamine hit. You can take a hit of ecstasy and, oh my God, it feels great. You can snort a line of coke and it feels fantastic, you know. But there are other things that you can do naturally that will stimulate these things to you. And they're actually not something that – what happens with those is it becomes, whether it's pornography or it's drugs or something, at first it starts out, it's so easy, and then it turns out it's your master, and it brings you in. You need more and more and more in order to even try to maintain the same.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, life is different. Life is very additive. You know, you can create new and more relationships, deeper relationships.
Mm-hmm. I was talking with somebody this week, and we were talking about the fact that he could not imagine experiencing anything like what substances
delivered.
And I said, have you ever felt anything, any kind of euphoria in your life that resembles what you've experienced with substances? And he said, yes, once. And I said, what was it? And he said, when I was in love. Mm-hmm. And then we got it open. Yeah. And then it opened this whole conversation about how the relationship ended, what happened, how he felt, where his spiral started. And it was like this stake in the ground moment. I mean, for me, in helping him, it was a great moment. But in his awareness, it was like, well, maybe, I mean, do you think if I have a relationship, I might not want to do all this shit? And I was like, well, let's try.
What's amazing to me is how the neurological studies these days are showing the similarities between addiction and love. Love and addiction. Yeah. What happens in the brain?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And could it be that we were made to love and be loved?
Right.
For sure. Yeah.
And that addiction is a facsimile that gets us sidetracked. But it's
for sure. That is for sure overall what it is. That's exactly what it is that we were made to love and to be loved and to know and to be known. And we were made, I think also, I asked my brother one time, this is way before the magazine, and he's pretty smart because, you know, he's gone to a lot of AA and he's pretty deep and he's a real smart guy. And I texted him one morning, I dropped the kids off. I sent him a text. And I go, what's the meaning of life? What's this all about? What are we here for? Because this is part of my own mentality. And even in depression for years, I kept thinking like, what are we here for? Are we here to make money? Are we here to screw as many people as we can? I went through a period like, no, we're here to create as many experiences so when we're old, we can look back. You know, what is the whole, what is this about? Is it to get as many toys or to, you know? And I texted him one morning the deep question, like, what are we here for? And I got back an immediate reply, and it was to give confidence to others. And I was like, what the hell kind of an answer is that? what is that? I didn't bother. I thought, well, that was intentional. So I didn't bother to reply or anything or to ask more. Instead, I thought, he probably gave that for me to chew on. So it took me a couple of days to break down the ingredients, if you will, of how can you give confidence to others? And so I really started from kind of like an engineering background. Well, what are the prerequisites to give confidence to others? And I realized pretty quickly, I'm like, if I told you about to try to advise you or inspire you or give you hope or give you confidence about something that I had not gone through myself, right? Say you're divorced and you're on the other side, or you're having a hard time dating. I've never done that, right? Yeah. So in order to give confidence to others, you have to go through something that's bad, I would say. I don't know, this is what my mindset is. You have to go through the fire and then be able to come out the other side and then turn around and say, hey, oh, you're going through the same thing here? It's going to be okay. It's going to be all right. And so I think that when I started breaking that down about, so now what it does is it actually gives meaning and purpose to all of the bad things that happen in our lives, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It gives meaning and purpose to all the bad things. And sometimes it's really, really hard. Like if nothing else, you can say, hey, when somebody's going through this, you can go, shit, man, well, get through this. And someday you're going to be able to help somebody else out that's going through something as bad or worse than you're going through right now. Mm-hmm. And I think that is really what this is that we're supposed to be of service and value and connect with others and to help others on purpose. Mm-hmm. And this in serving and doing charity work and things like that, what people don't understand is when you volunteer and you do things charity-wise or whatever it might be, you might think like, oh, well, I'm doing this to help other people. The truth of the matter is, I think I'm doing this for myself. Like, I feel good when I do this. Mm-hmm. I'm actually not even really doing it for you. Like, helping other people, it makes me feel good.
Yeah.
So therefore, I want to do it. So That's how it's supposed to be, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rob, you certainly are giving confidence and hope and inspiration to others. That's what the magazine is doing. How do our listeners subscribe to the magazine? How do they get on board?
Sure. So it's real simple. First of all, we're free. So we've always been free. We'll always be free. We're a free magazine. They go to our website, recoverytodaymagazine.com, recoverytodaymagazine.com. And when you get there, you just put in your name and your email. As soon as you do that, then we bring you over to, you'll have access to every one of our issues. We're a mobile app. So it's super cool because the content is like content like this, where you can watch videos, you can listen to audios. If there's a reader or something like that, you can click and go right directly to their book or their website or their social, whatever it might be. We call ourselves a modern multimedia magazine. But if they go to recoverytodaymagazine.com, subscribe there, they'll get access to every single issue that we've done. And our intention and what we have done for 56 issues, we'll continue to do, is each and every issue that we do is going to be better than the last issue. It's just kind of how it goes.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's fantastic work. I was so blown away. By the way, I downloaded the mobile app yesterday.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and I got.
So you can see my article.
Yeah. And I mean, they're just names and faces everybody will recognize. Inspirational stories,
right?
To fit every situation. Rob, thank you so much for
Absolutely,
taking time
Rob.
To join us.
My absolute pleasure. I think you guys are doing a really cool thing also. And don't you feel good doing something like this? I feel good.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, this is a highlight of our week. And I mean, we say that all the time, but I mean, I really mean that. It really is. I love getting to meet interesting people who are doing great and creative things. And yeah, it's totally good. And we get feedback as well from listeners that are really vulnerable feedback. Do you guys, I'm sure your magazine gets people that respond to you and shares.
We get good, you know, a lot of times most of the time we get really great stuff on our, we've got a pretty big Instagram too. Maybe I'll plug that as Recovery Today Mag. MAG. And most of the time, you know, people on Instagram, they like things like that. Sometimes we'll get emails from people that are like, oh my God, seriously? Like, you know, and then I have to remind, one time, I'm very driven by affirmation.
Okay.
So I like people saying, hey, great job. I don't like it when people say, man, you know, I don't like that. And so we get, sometimes I've got some crazy emails and then I got to go, well, okay, like, I'm not working in like the skiing niche or the jet water skiing or the food niche. Like I'm working in, this is mental health. So this is their mental health issues.
Yeah.
So usually I forward it to our editor and I'll go, look at this. And it should go, OMG or some shit like that. You know?
Yeah.
But I mean, it's the only thing that you can do, but most of the time, most every 99% of the stuff is really affirming and cool and oh my God, I never knew this existed and some stuff like that. And thank you know, everything like that, that I do this for and why I said I would do this. If I won Powerball, I would still do this. I getting to talk to people like you, getting to whether I'm the interviewee, which is pretty cool. I don't get to do that much, or interviewing. I feel better. I like this. I like to give advice, or it's the whole purpose of like, hey man, like you're going to get through this type of thing. So it's fun. I feel better.
Yeah. Well, thanks again, Rob, for joining us today. It's been great talking to you.
Pleasure's all mine, guys. Thanks again. And if there's anything that we can do for you, just let us know.
Absolutely. Right. We will.
So listeners, stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment.
Thanks,
on
guys.
The Positive Sobriety Podcast.
Welcome back to the Positive Sobriety Podcast. And Nate, that conversation, I felt like we kind of made a new friend.
I loved it, man.
Yeah.
And it's great to have a guest that you don't have to drag answers out
of. It makes our job a lot easier.
It really does. He's got something to say. He's excited about saying it. What a delightful guy, Rob
Hanley
is.
Yeah, and really, that, you know, I loved that he said that, you know, if he won the lottery tomorrow, he'd still be putting out this publication and creating a platform for people to be heard in their stories and what they bring to the recovery community.
You know, that reminds me of, you know, the old joke about the farmer who won the lottery, won the $1 million.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. So the interviewer asked him, what are you going to do with $1 million? He says, I think I'll keep farming till it's gone. Well, see, farmers like that
the
joke.
Farmers get that joke
a lot
quicker.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. But it was a great conversation, and I think that it's something I want our listeners to be aware of, that online magazine, Recovery Today, they can get that on an app form,
right,
like you mentioned, or going to their website, and it is people that you will know from other walks of life, entertainment or technology or any number of areas. And I think that it's sort of a TED Talk kind of a magazine.
There you go.
You know, in a lot of ways. People are giving you their elevator speech really concisely, but in an encouraging way. So,
yeah. All right, say, before we go, let's remind our listeners that we read the mail if they want to send us a note.
We do.
And in fact, in an upcoming episode, we'll read some of the mail on the air.
Yeah.
So we would love to hear from you, love to hear your questions, your comments, your information, your pushback, whatever whatever's going on in that fertile imagination of yours. If you would like to communicate it, we would love to hear from you.
Right.
Just drop us a line through the magic of the worldwide interweb. Send us an email to positivesobrietypodcast@gmail.com.
Right. And a suggested guest, if you have a connection to someone you think might be a potential a story that we'd like to share here. We'd love to know about it.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, I think our time is coming to a close, David. It's been delightful, as always.
Absolutely.
Friends, until next time, I'm Nate.
I'm David.
We're your pals on the Positive Sobriety Podcast. The Positive Sobriety Podcast is recorded at Crossroads for the Nations in Brentwood, Tennessee. Live producer Rex Schnelli, music by Rex Schnelli, theme music by Matt Ulrich. Hair and makeup by Lyle Lovett. Wardrobe by Kathy Gifford.